Yeah, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're going to be talking about one of his recent articles on newsreviews.com. Now, if you don't read Dr. Cuddy's articles or keep them, in a folder while you're missing something, I certainly do. You can go to newsreviews.com, look over on the left side, you'll see his name, click on that, and then they'll list all of the articles he's written for News Reviews, and I keep them because they have fascinating material in them, all sorts of documentation and information that you can document for yourself, and Dr. Cuddy will help you get the documentation on it. It will give you an overview not only of what's happening historically, but of this true spiritual battle that we're engaged in. Certainly Dr. Cuddy is one of the few people, other than here at Radio Liberty, I think, who has an excellent grasp, of the true spiritual nature of this battle, this struggle we're engaged in for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So without further ado, Dr. Dennis Cuddy has taught at the university level. He has worked in the Department of Education under the Reagan administration, testified before Congress. Certainly he is an excellent writer. We carry a few of his books that are still in print, like Cover Up, Timeline for the New World Order in Education, his books on mental health, Road to Socialism, and a small pamphlet called Conspiracy, Secret Records Revealed, not the Secret Records Revealed book, which we still have to get back in print. But anyway, Dr. Cuddy, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and tell us, of course, what about your latest article?
Well, the latest article is called Downplaying Activities That Dictate Certain Geopolitical Goals. But first, I'd like to spend just a few minutes, about 5 minutes, on the last week's article, since we didn't get to discuss that. And that's about something called the Texas Freedom Network. People may say, well, I'm in California or Washington or wherever, so that doesn't apply to me. But the thing is, I've mentioned in the past there are Bible curriculum in the nation, and I'm not going to talk about the one I've been talking about, the Bible Literacy Project, but there really are some that are okay, for example, the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. Well, what's happened is this very liberal group, the Texas Freedom Network, is paying a great deal of attention to this use down in the state of Texas. And the reason it's important, whether you're in California or wherever, is textbook publishers gear things towards Texas and California because those are the largest populations. And so if you're in Missouri or Oregon, it doesn't matter. Chances are the shape of your own textbook comes out of Texas and California, what those states deem acceptable in terms of public school textbooks. And so after the break, we can get back to what this Texas Freedom Network is trying to do.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here then in just a moment or two with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Believe me, there is an attack on Christianity, the goal of our enemies, a new world order, a new world religion. Certainly entails destruction of Christianity. And I hate to say it, but there truly is a conspiracy against God, a conspiracy against Christianity, and these people hate Jesus Christ our Lord. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we always look forward to having him as a guest here on our program. Dr. Cuddy has taught at the university level. He was in the Department of Education under the Reagan administration. He has testified before Congress. He is a writer, and we carry all of the books he has that are in print, and You can give us a call and get certainly get access to them. But right now we're going to be talking about the Texas Literacy or maybe it's Freedom Network. Anyway, it is part of this organized effort to destroy faith in Christianity. Now, there are some excellent curriculums that are bringing the Bible into the schools under one guise or another. Some of them are after-school programs. But basically, we have to let our young people understand the true nature of our spiritual battle, and they have to read the Word of God. And everything is being done to undermine that. And now, increasingly in Texas, there's a new movement to destroy this. So pick up the story there, Dennis.
Sure. Just for a couple of minutes or so, the Texas Freedom Network is a very liberal organization, and they were recently made an effort and made a big announcement and a report about this National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. And the problem it had was that it was too conservative. The TFN, which also opposes things like the National Day of Prayer, said that this National Council's curriculum was a political agenda of dismantling the wall of separation between church and state and increasing the role of religion in public life. And that's what it found offensive. And so it was talking about misquoting the founders of the country. But if you look at Jefferson for any length of time, and he's the one largely responsible for the concept of separation of church and state, he did mean that religion should be independent of government. There should not be any state or government church. However, it's the furthest thing from his mind and the rest of the founders that religion should play no role in our public life. In fact, for about 50 years or so, the government actually funded certain religious activities. So this notion of separation in church and state applied today is really totally fallacious. It has a totally different meaning now. And as Dr. Stan has said, it's really to try and get religion, moral values out of the public arena. And an assault on Christianity as well as other religions in this regard. The Texas Freedom Network primarily opposed this. It called it a certain fundamentalist form of Protestantism, which was exhibited in this National Council's curriculum. And so that was another problem that it had with it. But the point is, you need to watch out for this.
Hold that thought. We're going to just bring our other stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy is discussing this Texas Freedom Alliance, which is really an anti-Christian organization that wants to have any mention of Christianity or moral values or anything of any significance removed from the reality of our children, because the battle is being played out in the minds of our children. Destroy their belief of a belief in God of one generation, and you will have destroyed the religious foundation of that nation. And those who will not, of course, be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And there are many people who want a tyrannical rule. And they realize, of course, that a barrier to that is a belief in God. So pick up the story there.
Sure. Well, basically, just to wrap it up, the Texas Freedom Network is a liberal organization. They oppose primarily the role of religion in public life. They don't want that to be increased. And regarding this particular curriculum, they don't like its certain fundamentalist form of Protestantism. And so what I'm suggesting is wherever you are, California, Missouri, Oklahoma, doesn't matter, this type of issue is going to arise wherever you are, wherever there's a Bible curriculum instituted in the schools. And it may not be called the Texas Freedom Network wherever you are, but their affiliate organization, you know, the California Freedom Network or whatever, will be right there when the hearings they just recently had in Texas to have legislation saying that you could have this Bible curriculum in the schools. The ACLU showed up, any number of them, because they knew that Texas was a key to this. So just be wary of this. Watch out for this type of organization coming out in your own state.
And so, I think it's so interesting. They use the word freedom. And they use this, of course, freedom means we can't have anything having to do with Christianity in the schools. Basically, of course, the ultimate goal is the destruction of all freedom. But they're so clever in these names they come up with, and they're so confusing for the average individual. Go ahead.
Right. And not just in the schools, but this role of religion in public life. In other words, you are not supposed to bring your religious views into the public arena. So it's even more than just trying to block this in the schools. Okay, I just wanted to touch on that briefly. The current article this week is titled Downplaying Activities That Dictate Certain Geopolitical Goals. And if you look at newswithviews.com, you'll notice that I have that title in quotes. And the reason that's in quotes is that a couple of weeks ago, roughly, I had an article which used that particular phrase. It was talking about oil and Iraq, the Iraq War, oil and world government is what it was titled. And in there, I had quoted from the Council on Foreign Relations and James Baker III Institute report that was before 9/11 happened. And that's important. They were writing this before 9/11. And it said that, sure, obtaining oil from the Caspian region would be important. But then it said, quote, diplomatic activities that dictated certain geopolitical goals that pertain to transportation routes would be downplayed in this regard. And that sounds, you know, like a lot of State Department speak, foreign policy jargon. But what's important about it is what they're saying is on the surface there will be this presentation of oil and the availability of oil and the oil companies will go along and so on. But actually, the transportation routes that it would take, there were geopolitical goals that they wanted to downplay. They didn't want to emphasize that. They don't want you to know why they're doing these certain things. It's okay to talk about oil, getting oil, but there's more to the agenda. And so after I used that phrase, many people said, well, you know, okay, Dr. Cuddy, you've mentioned this certain geopolitical goals. What are you talking about? What are these goals? And so I thought in this article it would be instructive if I gave several examples of how the power elite works in this regard, because it's hardly ever what they're presented on the surface level. So one example is I mentioned previously in a couple of columns a 1952 map by the World Association of Parliamentarians for World Government regarding what nations' forces will police what other nations under a world government. And this is because, logically, you can figure that a nation's own soldiers aren't going to want to crack down on its own population. And so foreign troops would be more willing to do that. Do you recall that, Dr. Sands?
I sure do.
Yeah.
I think it's very important.
Yeah, this is a particularly interesting map and a particularly interesting group. Not too many people, you know, reflect on that. So what's happening is you have economic forces, as I've mentioned in the past, that are driving this mechanism the power elite has. They like to use coercive mechanisms, maybe economic crises, synthesizing Eastern communism and Western capitalism into a world socialist government. But ultimately, all of this, whatever they try to do, relies upon their enforcement mechanism, which is usually military force, or at least the threat of its use. So if you look at the U.S., according to that 1952 map, and you're looking forward, you're planning for the world government to come, what you would try to do is try to place, and this would be permanent military placement, of forces as near as possible to both Russia and China. You want to get them at the nexus there so that they can go either way, you know, to the north, Russia, to the east, to China. And so if you look at this map, or your own map, just get out a map, you'll see that these two large nations who are seen perceived as the greatest threat to American interests at the time, you'll see that strategically what you'll want to do is have a placement in the Caspian region, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and all of those. And that just happens to be, well, it doesn't just happen to be, where this 1952 map has U.S. forces policing under a world government. In other words, if you're in 1952, the surface look at this thing would be, well, you know, if there is such a plan, surely they'd want American forces in Moscow or Leningrad or wherever. No. They specifically had them in this particular Caspian region, all right? And then 10 years ago from now, what happened was the U.S. was holding military exercises in those areas. Now, even 10 years ago, a lot of people would say, you know, what are we doing there? What's a Kazakhstan? You know, why do we want to be there? And there's, you know, there's nothing obvious. Afghanistan had to even, you know, come up as a problem. And so what we did 10 years ago, we held these military exercises. Then after 9/11, you know, that gives you the excuse, the pretext, the incident. You negotiate these short-term, you always call them short-term, right, so the nations don't get panicky about you wanting to be there permanently. So you negotiate these short-term military bases there, but now what you find is that these bases there are seen by the people there on the ground is becoming, you know, more and more permanent. In other words, we're not there just temporarily, and then it looks like we're going to pull out. These bases are getting larger and reinforced and so on. Now, so how does this work with the Paralee? Okay, while the protection of the new Afghan government and of Caspian oil routes against the Taliban's activities is given as the reason for this permanency, and, you know, that's the upfront reason, that's the surface reason, that's what people are told, if you ask them in the media or State Department, whatever. But, as I say, the, quote, downplayed certain geopolitical goal is actually that strategic permanent placement of military forces between Russia and China, strategically placed for, you know, quick military movement, short range rocket launches, whatever, or at least the threat of them. You know, I mean, Russia and China see those military U.S. forces right off their, you know, across the border from them. Okay, similarly, if you look at the situation in Iraq, what you find is that, and we mentioned this before, the project for the new American century has stated as a goal, or it's stated in the past as a goal, the permanent, see, that's that word to get permanent placement of American military forces in the Gulf region. Okay, now, when 9/11 happens, and then we're going to invade Iraq, you hear various surface rationales. You know, this is always the sort of surface pap that the public is given. Well, there's weapons of mass destruction. You know, we have to get those out of there. Well, you know, there may have not have been a WMD, but we're at least liberating the Iraqis from the dictator, so that's why we're there. And those are given on the surface as the reason, the justification, the rationale for the American invasion of Iraq. However, if you look at what's happened since that occurred, there's this continued chaos. What you sense is that there's this underlying reason really behind all of this. I mean, why would you be so inept as to allow this chaos to continue? Why would you go in there with only 150,000 troops when you need, you know, at least three times that many to police and provide security for an entire nation? Okay, but if you look at it from the perspective of this downplayed certain geopolitical goal, that you want this permanent military presence there, then the chaos makes perfect sense, because that allows you to have these temporary, you know, just like in Kazakhstan, these temporary short-term military bases, but then say to the government of Iraq, with all of this chaos going on, you know, we better stick around there. We're telling you that you really do need to allow these bases to become very large and more or less permanent, because this situation isn't going to get any better anytime soon. You may be attacked or undermined, or, you know, there's continued chaos. You need our help, and so on.
Could I just comment for our listeners? If you'd like to see this plan laid out, you go to newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. They have there posted something called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And I'm not sure the exact page, although I think it's page 14, where they actually talk about the necessity of permanently stationing troops in the Middle East, whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not. And certainly the leaders of our country are part of this little group. There are only 27 of them initially, and maybe have expanded to 40 or 50, but it's Rumsfeld and Cheney and John Bolton and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Liddy and Gary Bauer to lead the conservatives, and William Bennett to lead the Catholics, and Paul Gaffney to lead the conservatives. And I mean, this thing is all very well planned. William Potter Oates to lead the Jewish contingent. It's all planned by an elite. And, of course, they intend to keep us there indefinitely, because there is a cosmic script, in my estimation. And I think probably Dr. Cuddy would agree. We'll see when we get back. But there is a cosmic script. Everything is planned ahead of time. Nothing happens by accident. If you think that the chaos that we see over there and all the tragedy and horror in Iraq just happened, you're incredibly naive. We've got brilliant people in charge. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know what they're doing. Dr. Kennedy, you pick up the story.
Okay. Basically, what I'm talking about in this article is what Dr. Stan says over and over again. It's the news behind the news, the story behind the story. What I'm trying to display is that we're given surface reasons for things happening, weapons of mass destruction, you know, get rid of the Iraqi dictator on the surface. that really there's something else going on, and it's these downplayed certain geopolitical goals that are really driving this, but they don't want the public to know this. And oftentimes it has to do with this permanent stationing of military forces at strategic locations around the world, because they will be the enforcement mechanism for the power elites pushing this global plan as represented in this 1952 map or Percy Corbett's book in 1942, Post-War Worlds, which pretty much outlined what Cecil Rhodes' secret society had wanted. And so that's what this is, the story behind the story, the news behind the news. And so in the case of Iraq, in the Project for the New American Century, the same thing was happening with this other group that I mentioned earlier that issued its report, this James Baker Institute and the CFR jointly, which came out before 9/11. They also had the same sort of plan for Iraq. In fact, they said in their report that Saddam's really irrelevant. He just offers an excuse for doing this thing. So the Project New American Century is singing the same song as this this other report that came out before 9/11 even. Okay, so now we have the permanent stationing of American military forces in Iraq, and the accomplishment of this, quote, downplayed certain geopolitical goal, quote, places U.S. forces strategically between Syria and Iran in order to police this Middle Eastern region. And, you know, that puts them right there between, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah. Hezbollah is supported by Iran and so on, as well as the Shiites in the south, the east part of Iraq. Okay, now what we're told is that we have this democratic opposition. You know, the Democrat response, this is outrageous, this war is dragging on too long, longer than World War II, we need to withdraw our troops and so on. And I remember watching Senator Carl Levin on Fox News Sunday a couple of weeks ago, April 15th actually, and he said, you know, we need to issue this ultimatum here, there must be political progress, this isn't a military solution. We need a political solution, so we should demand of the Iraqis that they have political progress, or we're going to withdraw. Well, ordinarily, that type of thing, if let's say in Vietnam, you know, has some weight to it, because you would tell the South Vietnamese, well, if you don't shape up, and you know, we're putting up a million men or 600,000, so you put up a million man army, then what you find is General Key, then, and others say, oh yeah, all right, we don't want to be overrun, so yeah, we'll get you a million man army, and so that threat means something. In this case, it doesn't mean diddly, because the Shiites are the majority, and if you try and threaten the Shiites that you're going to pull out, they'll say, okay, fine, do it, and then we can beat up the Sunnis even more than we're trying to do now, because, you know, Saddam was a Sunni, and it's time for revenge, and if we have a problem, we can invite our Shiite buddies from Iran in here to shore up our backside. So, you know, this type of threat really isn't going to go anywhere in terms of the Democrat response. So what you have, then, is the American military at the present is the most useful enforcement mechanism. That's why I gave them as an example in Kazakhstan, them as an example in Iraq as well. And they're also in Bosnia and other places strategically over the past decades. However, the eventual world government, if you look at that map, it talks about all the nations. And so it has other nations' military forces involved as well.
Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he is talking about this map, and I've seen it. It was laid out in 1952, but everything is long-range planning. There really are people from generation to generation who are working to bring about a world government, a new world religion, and, of course, a one-world ruler. They have been doing this. I believe these people are energized spiritually to do what they're doing. And, of course, they're people of great wealth and great power. And, of course, the plan has always been that at this time in history, and this goes back at least 50 years, 55 years, to the fact that they were intending that American forces would be stationed in the Middle East at this time in history. You needed an excuse. You needed to have a justification for the American people. Oh, we've just got to catch Osama bin Laden. We're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. I remember when the president promised that, he just never told us when he was going to get him dead or alive. And then Of course, the justification for going into Iraq, rather than pursuing Osama bin Laden and trying to destroy al-Qaeda, we didn't try to destroy the Islamic terrorist movement. Why, we changed our plan in midstream, and now we're in the mess we are today. But, oh, shucks, it was just a mistake. Oh, we're so incompetent, we just don't know what. How did we get into this situation? Well, we're just going to have to continue doing what we're doing. We'll now have not an increase in number of troops, we'll have a surge. Don't you feel better knowing we're not increasing the troops, we're simply surging them? Dr. Cuddy, please go ahead.
I guess it's really hard to track down a guy dragging a dialysis machine over some mountains. I guess he has it pretty well camouflaged because he's doing that maybe on a donkey's back or something. But anyway, in case people say, well, you know, who, World Associate Parliamentarians for World Government, who the heck are they? They were located in London, but they have American operatives. The Louis Sohn, S-O-H-N, was. I talked to him, I don't know if he's still alive, a few years ago. He was up at George Washington University. And Louis was very, very close to Grenville Clark, a name that's very foreign, prominent in foreign policy going back to the 30s and 40s. And so there are Americans involved in this World Association. I mean, just because it has parliamentarians doesn't mean it's strictly, you know, British. So anyway, this is another group which is going along with this this plan. And so what you have is other nations involved as well in the end. I've just mentioned a couple of American examples. But according to this 1952 map, not only would the U.S. troops be where I mentioned before, as well as Bosnia, but what you have under this world government is Russian forces, if you look at the map, would be policing the U.S. in the U.S. from about where Fort Riley, Kansas is down to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and eastward over to North Carolina. And so the reason I bring that up is about 10 years ago, what you find is that former Soviet bloc forces were actually involved in joint military exercises right there at Fort Riley in August of 95 at Fort Polk in Louisiana, and then in the state where I am, North Carolina, in the western part of the state, also in 95, I remember a Russian police officer was patrolling up and down the street and helped arrest somebody in western North Carolina. He was with the local police, but there he was and helping to arrest somebody. Now, pertaining to China, since I mentioned Russia before and also China, according to this 1952 map, it says Mongolian, which is the northern part of China, Chinese forces, I think it's Liaoping province up there, under a world government would be policing Mexico, where today, just so happens, not coincidentally, a major Chinese company, Hutchison Whampoa, which operates also Balboa and Cristobal, both ends of the Panama Canal, now also just happens to be operating the deepwater port of Lazaro Cardenas. And that, if you've been paying attention to Jerome Corsi and others recently talking about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, that's where you have a major port offloading Chinese containers from ships, and then they move these containers, largely uninspected, and who knows, you know, what they're containing, AK-47s, maybe some chemical weapons of mass destruction, whatever, and they're largely not inspected. And they come up into the U.S. It will be via the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is planned, although there's some resistance there, and then up into the U.S. by this Trans-America Highway to Kansas City, where they are first inspected by Mexicans in Kansas City. Not Americans, by Mexicans is where they really have their first major inspection. And this is occurring largely, as I said, under NAFTA now, and then the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is developing, which involves economics as well as security issues. And the reason for that is that's supposed to bring about the North American community, which will then evolve into the North American Union, just like the European community led to the European Union.
I wonder how many Americans have ever wondered why American corporations, the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, Asian Development Bank, have invested hundreds of billions of dollars to build up communist China for. We Moran. This is Dr. Stan here, and of course we're simply asking the question, why is it that American corporations certainly have, and American banks and American government agencies have spent literally hundreds of billions of dollars transferring America's manufacturing over to communist China, arrange the tariffs so it's advantageous to be the producing in China. Why are we spending so much money to actually build up the economy of communist China while they're doing everything they can to tear down and destroy the economy and the manufacturing of the United States? And nobody seems to want to ask that question. Go ahead, Dr. Kennedy. Go right ahead, Dr. Kennedy. Are you there? We seem to be having some trouble. I'm going to ask my producer to get our engineer here. And in the meantime, of course, I'll be talking to Dr. Cuddy. Hang in there. We'll see if we can get things straightened out.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. What you would do with communist China and building them up is to not only have this perceived threat, since we claim that the Soviet Union has become very peaceful and cooperative and actually has demised. So you need this new threat, because as Lincoln Bloomfield said back in the 60s, if the communist dynamic were greatly abated, the West would lose whatever incentive it has for world government. But secondly, you need to pump a lot of money into them so they can build up their own military as well as their own economy. And then they have bought a lot of our debt, about $1 trillion of our debt. And the reason you want them to have this $1 trillion of debt is so that then they can come back and say, okay, we're going to collect on this debt unless you shape up and accept the Amero. And so the goal then is that this North American Union would have its new international currency, the Amero, which then can be linked with the European Union and its currency, the Euro, to form this world socialist government. And it will be a socialist government, because most of the heads of European nations are already vice presidents of something called Socialist International. Okay. Now, the world socialist government will be formed, as I've said many times in the past, by linking regional economic arrangements. And that's been there, the power elite's ultimate, the ultimate. I've been talking about, various aspects. But their ultimate, quote, downplayed certain geopolitical goals, according to, this World Association and Cecil Rhodes' Secret Society of the Elect, and so on. And then, of course, the various currencies, the Amero, the Euro, and so on, will be replaced by one global currency in about 11 years from now. It's supposed to be around 2018 AD. It'll be called the Phoenix. And if you want to see a picture of it, look at the cover.
Hold that thought right there. Dr. Cuddy is our guest. He's talking about, of course, how they're going to eventually change the currency. There will be the Amero here, and then there will be a world currency. It's called the Phoenix. All of this is planned, step by step. They know exactly what they're doing. They can't let the common people know, because most of them certainly want to maintain their freedom. They want to maintain national sovereignty. They are opposed to massive immigration. They're opposed to the destruction of the economy of the United States and the destruction of the value of our currency. But then these people don't understand what's good for them. The elite have a plan. They're going to carry it out no matter what the common people feel. So pick the story up there, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. And so the Amero and the Euro and all the others are these regional currencies are supposed to be replaced in the year 2018 by the Phoenix. And if you want to see a picture of it, just go to your library and look at the cover of the journal, a magazine called The Economist. It's a British publication, January 9, 1988. Just look at the cover, and it says pencil in the Phoenix for the year 2018. And that would have been, 30 years from the time of the publication, 1988, 2018. So, at least 30 years in advance they had that plan. So the military said is the key enforcement mechanism concerning Rhodes and the power elite's plan. In addition, personnel becomes critically important in this. I mean, you actually have to have people to carry this thing out. So in that regard, looking at Iraq, you had a number of generals, everybody probably remembers them, who were criticizing President Bush's handling of the Iraq War. Well, what happened was they were either dismissed or resigned, And so the president reached way down, you know, not just at the surface, reached way down, even to the people who had resigned. I mean, General Peter Schoomaker had actually retired. And so President Bush reaches way down the ladder of rank. And on August 1 of 2003, he names a new Army Chief of Staff, General Peter Schoomaker. Well, why Schoomaker? As I said, personnel is really important. Schoomaker was Rhodes Scholar General Wesley Clark's assistant at Fort Hood. So, you know, he can be counted on to do the bidding of these people. And he was the assistant when the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms raid on the Branch Davidian compound occurred. There was actually, if you look back at the place at Fort Hood where he was, a mock-up of the Branch Davidian compound where they could practice, you know, the raid for training purposes anyway. So anyway, as you remember, the BATF raid went not very well at all. And so Schoomaker, and I put a quote here, met with Governor Richards on the evening of February 28, 1993, and answered her questions concerning the types of military equipment the BATF had used during the raid and the types of military equipment which federal law enforcement officials might use in the future. And now the reason I'm putting that as a quote, that's actually from a House of Representatives report about the federal law enforcement agency's actions against the Branch Davidians. So the Schoomaker is right there, heavily involved in this. And also, I put down an article from Hong Kong. You wouldn't find it here, but from Hong Kong, which had Schoomaker, who's talking to, I think, a breakfast over there. And he said, the title of the article is U.S. Elite Seek PLA Training Links. In other words, Schoomaker says we should have training links with our communist Chinese counterparts. And so Schoomaker and Wesley Clark are just the type of generals that the power elite likes. Now, as I've said before, there's always an incident of some sort that has to be used for these things to occur, for the power elite's plan to go forward, just like the sinking of the Maine was allegedly by Spain in 1898. And we know now that the Spanish did not do that. But anyway, at the time, it served as a good incident so that we could go to war. Mr. Hearst and his newspaper said, you know, give me an incident and I'll give you pictures and we'll have our war. And so this allowed the power elite to place military forces where their world government plan requires. Now, the attack of 9/11 was the incident which allowed U.S. forces, as I said, to be placed in the Caspian region. And now that American forces are in Iraq, strategically between Iran and Syria, incidents can occur which will allow invasion of those nations. See how neat that works out? Concerning Iran, there's a couple of possibilities. Could be their involvement in this ongoing sectarian conflict in Iraq, or it could be Iran's development of nuclear weapons. You know, something could come about there. But how about Syria? Well, the incident there could be a new attack upon Israel by the allies of Syria, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Hezbollah is also supported by Iran. Or it could be our, and I put quotes around this, discovery, quote, that Syria is where Saddam sent his weapons of mass destruction. Now, you would think that President Bush, since he's made such a big deal about we went to Iraq to get WMD, would you know, sound this from the rooftops that that's where they went. And we know that that Saddam had them. I mean, he used them against Iran, and we helped provide him the materials to make these weapons, the chemical weapons of mass destruction. So the question is, you know, what did he do with them? It's not whether he had them or not. We know he had them.
Could I just comment for the person who doubts what Dr. Cuddy is saying? We've checked this out with some great, prominent people. I suggest you go up on the Internet and Google in Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, and then Syria. And you'll find probably 50,000 or more of various sites that discuss this. So there's no question everybody in the world knows it, except the American people, because, of course, they're never to understand what's really going on. Pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Right. However, at a particularly opportune moment, we may discover that they're there if it is time, according to the power elite's plan, to invade Assyria. And so what you have are these incidents, and they don't just occur internationally like with Syria or Iran or Iraq, but the power elite uses these types of things domestically as well. Another primary goal is, for example, looking at this principle, to disarm the citizenry. Wherever you are, if you look at any dictatorship over the past 100 years or so, just before the dictatorship is instituted, they usually disarm the citizens. And what you find is that the power elite has to enforce its plan. They can't have the average John and Jane with weapons in their own possession, you know, handguns, whatever. And so what you would find is you'd have school shootings, and that would prompt increased demands for gun control. All right. Now, something that's rather important, a lot of people say, well, President Bush, you know, is he caused 9/11, or, you know, he did this, or somebody did such and such. They don't have to directly cause the incident. As I mentioned, oftentimes what they do is they create a situation, and then incidents they can predict will arise from that, and then they use that, the reaction to the public to that incident, to get what they want. And so they don't, in the case of the school shootings, they don't actually tell, you know, students to go out and shoot their classmates. But dialectically, what they do when they create the situation, they can anticipate that something will occur, like 9/11. It really didn't matter to them whether 19 people flew planes into buildings. I mean, you know, it could have been 12 people derailing trains, whatever. And so as an example of this gun situation, I put I have a page from a DARE, that's the anti-drug program. It's all over the nation, all the schools, wherever you are listening, you probably got a DARE program in your schools. But that program doesn't actually tell youngsters, don't do this, you know, it's wrong, they don't do that. They have this Socratic sort of questioning. And one of the pages from the Los Angeles school's DARE program has this little boy named Jimmy. And the little boy is at this bureau, and he's opening the drawer, and in there is the gun. He's looking at the gun. And according to this, Jimmy is asked what bad things can happen when you take a gun to school, and then it's asking, quote, what good things can happen by bringing a gun to school. And so this is like a conditioning mechanism that they use. And they can anticipate if you do this, you know, often enough, you might just have a school shooting. It's, you know, no surprise. So, for example, another incident would be teenage blacks rioting in Florida. Everybody there was wondering, you know, why are they doing this? You know, what's going on? Well, you find out the decade before, in the 60s, when these teenagers were just youngsters, elementary school, Carnegie had funded something called Project READ, R-E-A-D. And that would teach inner-city youngsters how to read. And the way they would do it, would they would have picture representations. And so when they taught the youngster how to read and spell the word porch, P-O-R-C-H, the example they would give is this little African-American child with a torch, and he'd be torching a porch. And that's what it would say. It would say, torch a porch. And so if you're teaching these youngsters to read by these examples, you know, it's no big surprise that in the 1970s they might just go out and torch a bunch of places. And at the time, there was a prosecutor. Later, she became a judge, Ellen Morfonius. And she said this regarding that. She was down in Florida. She said, quote, it's like subliminal advertising. If this isn't subversive and deliberately done as part of a master plan, only a sick mind could have produced it, end quote. Well, you know, that is the plan. It's a conditioning mechanism to get the public, whether it's teenagers or whatever, to do what you want them to do. In this case, it was, you know, violence and rioting and burning things and so on. Okay, now what they're doing in all of these cases, gun control, whatever, is trying to shape our thinking, the way we think, the values that we have, you know, unfreeze, change, and refreeze the values of the youth in schools and elsewhere. So they, for example, if you look at this recent Virginia Tech University shooting, they don't have to call up this guy and say, okay, now, you know, go walk out the door and shoot a bunch of people at Virginia Tech. What they anticipate is that this can happen over a period of time, and you look at them, and what happened here and at Columbine, and remember the student at Virginia Tech thought that the Columbine youngsters were martyrs, he called them martyrs, they committed suicide, right? They kill a bunch of people, then they commit suicide, all right? Now, if you have a mentally disturbed person, and remember, in Columbine, one of them, I think, was on Luvox, which has a frequent side effect, psychotic reactions. Who would give that to anybody? But apparently one of those youngsters was on that, Klebold or Harris, whichever one. And so what you have are these mentally disturbed students, And this will involve, of course, just like the gun control calls for more mental health screening. You know, we have to anticipate. You can't be too sure. You can't wait for the first signs. We've got to have mental health screenings of all youth, you know, just to be sure. So that would prompt that sort of reaction that the Power League likes, because that way they can get youngsters early on, you know, and shape whatever type of values and mental health they think is appropriate. And so each one of these youngsters, the two in Columbine and then this one, you know, Virginia Tech, all took their own lives. Now, to show how that works, to show how that sort of behavior is prompted, some years ago, about 20 years ago, I remember seeing in the Washington Post, I think it was a front page item, and they reported a dramatic increase in youth suicides. You know, just out of the blue, dramatic increase in youth suicides. They were puzzled, you know, how could this be? Well, I wrote a letter to the Washington Post, and they published it. And basically, what I did is I showed that elementary school children recently had been taught the theme song from MASH. And you may remember that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's about all anybody remembers, you know, the tune to it. But if you look at it, the actual title of that is Suicide is Painless. And the song explains, and the youngsters were learning the words, not just the melody, but the words. The song explains that the game of life is lost, cheating is the only way to win, and that suicide is painless, like that. And that's what these kids in elementary school were learning. So is it any wonder now when they get up in their teenage years, they may be deciding, you know, and contemplating suicide?
Well, I think, you know, even one of the most interesting things about Columbine is that part of the records are sealed. The parents can't find out. And 9 years, 8 or 9 years later, why are part of the records of what happened at Columbine sealed? Are we trying to keep Klebold and Harris from finding out? Are we trying to keep Osama bin Laden from finding out? Why are those records sealed? I mean, the parents are furious. They want to see all the records. So why are, in fact, they wanted to destroy them, and the judge wouldn't let them, but somebody's putting pressure on the judge to keep it secret. And, of course, I think they're keeping it secret from the American people. There's something else in Columbine, but we should be asking, what is it? And if they're concealing information there, and they're concealing information about what happened certainly at the Oklahoma City bombing, and what happened at 9-1-1, and I suspect that there'll be, you know, certainly information that'll be sealed from, you know, as a result of what's happened at Virginia Tech, to keep Osama bin Laden from learning. Go right ahead.
Yeah, they will, and well, we have a fair idea, though, about, we don't have so much, you know, I mean, we can suspect about Oklahoma City and so on, but we actually do have a fair idea of why they sealed and what they don't want the people to know about Columbine. Eagle Forum of Colorado actually produced a rather good long video where they actually went to the home of students at Columbine and, you know, sort of in-depth asked what the environment of that school was. And you wouldn't believe the things that are going on that led up to this. I mean, there was death education. There were all sorts of weird things going on at that school.
And suicide education, right?
Right, yeah. They would have them, you know, rubbing gravestones and reading the kamikaze letters. I mean, but it was even weirder than that, not just, you know, death education, but a lot of really strange, depressing types of activities, and the teachers were doing strange stuff and so on. So I'm fairly sure that they don't want that sort of information out into the public as well. So anyway, it's a conditioning process. You have all of this emphasized on suicide is painless. Lo and behold, youngsters start committing suicide. You have them taught torture porch, and lo and behold, a few years later, they're torching, you know, police cars and houses and whatever. Big surprise. And so that's why these things are happening. You don't think that these violent video games just came out of nowhere. I mean, that's a conditioning process. It's to create this disturbance, this violence, this chaos, because out of chaos, you can change values. And you can also have some sort of authoritarian crackdown eventually. And so I'll conclude by saying, while it's all right to look at surface events, you know, okay, look at weapons of mass destruction, that's fine. You know, you can look at that, getting rid of Saddam the dictator. But there's usually something the power elite is doing behind the scenes, this sort of downplayed certain geopolitical goal, which often is the strategic placement of military forces on a permanent at key places around the world. Not just this, I just used this 1952 map as an example, but that's generally what's happened domestically too. What you find is that something else is going on behind the scenes. These incidents of suicide, these school shootings don't just come out of nowhere. You know, they just not just happenstance. And so there's often some underlying reason for these. So in addition to looking at things at face value, also look at how whatever incident is, an economic incident, a school shooting, you know, foreign policy, whatever it is, ask yourself, how would this fit with the power elite's fundamental plan to move us towards a world government, which is their world socialist government, which is their ultimate, quote, downplayed certain geopolitical goal.
And I would simply point out that we have troops in 130 nations. We have 700 some odd overseas bases, and they're closing down bases in America to save money. Then why are we building bases in 130 nations? And I've heard the figure, it's something like over 700 different bases all throughout the world. So there's something much more than we're being told. After all, why are we closing bases here to save money and opening them so many other places? My guest today has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. His articles you can view on newswithviews.com. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dennis, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, I'll just conclude by picking up on what you just said. You know, we had 130 troops stationed in 130 nations, and you know, why is this when we're closing bases here? That's the whole idea. Gorbachev was part of this base closing commission that they had some years ago under former President Bush. And so, if you reduce those bases, then you also have to, of course, you don't want too many National Guard around because they could be used. So you send them overseas, right? You get them out of the country as well. Send them over to Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. And you can only do that under an emergency, right? So we have to have this emergency troop level up there. And so what happens is when 9/11, for example, happens, I think there was, you know, some AWACS, not our own AWACS. They were circling the Middle East. I think we used some British AWACS over here. So you get the people accustomed to that. And not only Russian troops having joint exercises in Fort Polk or Fort Riley or a policeman on the street of North Carolina, the communist Chinese were also here in my state riding up and down the street in state patrol cars, you know, training exercises. But you actually have the permanent station. There's a permanent stationing of German troops in New Mexico, and a German Air Force base in New Mexico, permanent. I mean, it's there. It's not just, you know, a four-month training exercise. They're there. And, you know, ask yourself, why? I mean, why are they permanently stationed in the U.S.? And so oftentimes you find this sort of gradualistic approach that is part of the larger plan that the power elite has, and it's oftentimes driven economically, sure, this sort of synthesis of regional economics. But military enforcement is always at the back of it. The enforcement mechanism is the key so that when a recalcitrant people start to rise up, they can be put down. Or you can at least threaten them. And that applies not only to us, but Russia, China. That's why those American forces are there in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. China knows they're there. Russia knows they're there. They know why they're there. And similarly, you had Russian troops, you know, were trying the missiles in Cuba and so forth. And that was, well, we've been through that in the past. That was just a ruse because what that was designed to do is guaranteed no invasion so that they could be used, Central America, Nicaragua, and so on, as a training base to send Russian troops, Cuban troops, communist troops over Africa and everywhere else. So once again, don't just look at things on the surface level, but see how this fits into the power elite's plan, moving us towards a world socialist government.
All right, well, we're out of time. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. It's always a pleasure to have him with us. And Dennis, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. And of course, we'll look forward to talking to you next week. God bless.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And one of our favorite guests, Dr. Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. We do carry his books, Cover Up, The Timeline for the New World Order in Education, his book, A Road to Socialism, Mental Health Screening, and Conspiracy Secret Records Revealed. That's a little short book, but all of these are important. And then, of course, we hope many of you want to get my DVD, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the book by the same title, our new DVD entitled Forbidden Secret, which will explain to you the fact that there has been for 5,000 years, a secret that has been passed down through the ages, so frightening in its implications that, of course, nobody would ever tell publicly what it is. And yet, of course, today it is being featured on Oprah Winfrey. It's being featured on Larry King. Why at this time in history would a secret that's been passed down through the ages suddenly be made public by people who are deeply involved with this occultist? Rhonda Burns has put forward the secret, works very closely with a woman named Mrs. Hicks, who channels a spirit named Abraham. And you can look at Mrs. Hicks on the Internet and Abraham, who she channels, and of course, the spirit simply takes over her body. And, of course, this is what this is really all about. This is what they're introducing to people all across America in introduction to demonic possession 1A. And it'll really make you happy for a time. And you can actually get money, and you can get power, and you can get the new car or new house you want or whatever it may be. But, of course, it's the price of eternal damnation. And a lot of people don't believe that there is another dimension out there, but there really is. If you have not yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You need to get them. And you need to get Pastor Joe Schimmel's other DVDs, like the Da Vinci Con, his other ones having to do with Hollywood. We also carry the new DVDs put out by Chris Pinto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, and Riddles in Stone. And these are very professionally done. I have small parts in both of them. But despite that, they're really very well done. And I would simply suggest that if you get those two, The Secret Mysteries and The Riddles in Stone, and my talk on Brotherhood of Darkness and Forbidden Secret, you'll know more than most college professors, certainly more than most ministers do, about the true nature of this spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And then, of course, please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And if you'd like to know why we are in the Middle East and why it would appear that we're going to be attacking Iran before too long, well, I pulled down my February newsletter. If you don't have access to the Internet, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. But if you have the Internet, my February newsletter, that is February 2007, if you want to know what really happened on 9/11, pull down my August, September, October, November, and December Radio Liberty letters. That's last year, 2006, and put them together and sit down and read them through two or three times. And I think you'll be convinced, as I am, that, of course, we have not been told the truth about what happened on 9/11. If you have not yet seen, of course, the DVDs we carry on 9/11, 9/11 Mysteries, 9/11 Press for the Truth, 9/11 In Plain Sight, 9/11 The Day That Changed America Forever, and, of course, Alex Jones's A Terror Storm. We do have a special. We can get them all. And I think that you'll realize, of course, once again, that 3,000 Americans died. But there's a serious question as to who is responsible. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.